Now is the moment of magic. I love how Victoria Safford phrases these holy moments, how she offers us the possibility of blessings within them. She refers to the holy days of Christmas and Hanukkah and Kwanzaa and the winter solstice as occasions to bring tiny lights into the dark universe. And she reminds us that those lights are blessings to each other and our world. I think about the darkness of this season as I was writing these words, sitting next to the balsam fir that I've brought into my living room and decorated with colorful lights and ornaments. When I turn off the other lights in the room and look at the tree at night, I see both the lights I've put on it and the darkness of the branches between them. And when I stop moving long enough to really sink into looking at it, my eyes and my brain begin to feel a kind of rest that I don't notice I've been missing until I do it. My garage has a motion sensor floodlight on it, and sometimes when I stand still long enough in my driveway, I can be there when it turns back off, and I can suddenly see the tiny pinpricks of light of the stars. Have you ever noticed how different it feels to have big overhead lights on and to sit in the dark with a candle? For me, noticing that difference is a moment of peace, of rest, and yes, of magic. There are moments that I can sometimes be aware of, other moments, a beautiful sunset, singing with other people, watching my dog bound with joy when she gets to be outside off her leash, being hugged by my teenager, sitting in the quiet calm of night camping in the North Woods. What moments of magic have you gotten to be aware of recently? I'm going to stop talking for a minute and invite you to bring one of those moments to mind. Close your eyes. Take a breath into the darkness that you've just created for yourself. And notice and recall a time that you noticed or witnessed something that made you remember to take a breath and just be in it. In her book, Pilgrim at Tinker Creek, Annie Dillard writes about one of her moments of magic. About 5 years ago, I saw a mockingbird make a straight vertical descent from the roof gutter of a four-story building. It was an act as careless, as spontaneous, as the curl of a stem or the kindling of a star. The mockingbird took a single step into the air and dropped. His wings were still folded against his sides as though he was singing from a limb and not falling, accelerating 32 feet per second through empty air. Just a breath before he would have been dashed on the ground, he unfurled his wings and with exact, deliberate care, revealing the broad bars of white, spread his elegant white banded tail and so floated onto the grass. I had just rounded a corner when his insouciant step caught my eye. There was no one else in sight. The fact of his free fall was like the old philosophical conundrum about the tree that falls in the forest. The answer must be, I think, that beauty and grace are performed whether or not we will or sense them. The least we can do is try to be there. Often that's easier said than done. There's much distraction in our world and being there to sense the beauty and grace that are always within and around us is a practice, takes practice. Especially when it's dark or cold, literally or figuratively. But Victoria Safford tells us we've already received our presence, ears to hear music, eyes to behold lights, hands to build true peace on earth and hold each other tight in love. We have within us the ability to notice beauty and grace, and to take from them the ability to learn and build and grow peace and love out of what we have noticed. One of the ways we can build that ability is to notice beauty. One of the ways we can build that ability to notice beauty and grace is to learn to accept all that is within and around us. I've been reading a book by Catherine May called Wintering: The Power of Rest and Retreat in Difficult Times. And it feels like this winter is a particularly good time for me to have found this book, as there are certainly some difficult times ahead. I feel a good bit of anxiety when I think about the current increase of political instability in the world we now also face in this country, and about the climate chaos already happening for many people that will impact everyone eventually, though not evenly. Catherine May writes, "Plants and animals don't fight the winter. They don't pretend it's not happening and attempt to carry on living the same lives that they lived in the summer. They prepare. They adapt. They perform extraordinary acts of metamorphosis to get them through. Winter is a time of withdrawing from the world, maximizing scant resources, carrying out acts of brutal efficiency, and vanishing from sight. But that's where the transformation occurs. Winter is not the death of the life cycle, but its crucible." She continues, "Once we stop wishing it were summer, winter can be a glorious season in which the world takes on a sparse beauty and even the pavements sparkle. It's a time for reflection and recuperation, for slow replenishment, for putting your house in order. Doing those deeply unfashionable things," she says, "slowing down, letting your spare time expand, getting enough sleep, resting, is a radical act now, but it is essential. This is a crossroads we all know, a moment when you need to shed a skin. If you do, you'll expose all those painful nerve endings and feel so raw that you'll need to take care of yourself for a while. If you don't, then that skin will harden around you. It's one of the most important choices you'll ever make." In that context, she still tells the story of a friend who has struggled with hypermania and depression and was working with her doctors to find the right set of medications that would fix her. She reached a turning point when her doctor told her, quote, "They could keep tinkering with her medications, but it would never solve anything. This isn't about getting you fixed," he said. "This is about living the best life you can with the parameters you have." This book inspires a couple of possibilities for me as I work to maintain or even achieve presence in this particular, increasingly difficult winter. One of them takes the question form, what if we listened to the cues of the natural world around us and rested during the winter? Just as my eyes and brain get a rest when I turn off the overhead light and sink into the soothing darkness of my tree, I could let myself slow down this season, give my body and mind and spirit a break. As I talked about a little last week, this idea flies in the face of the busyness that has become the holiday season. As we're sitting here reflecting on rest, much of the rest of Madison is chasing down last-minute deals. I've always found this busyness to be at odds with my pagan heart, which knows that the seasons cycle around and around, that they invite us into different ways of being, and which wants to slow down when the air is cold and the nights are long. That brings me to the second possibility the book inspired in me, which is, What if we accepted that winters are going to happen and spent our energy preparing for them instead of denying them? This gets at both a really good metaphor and a literal truth. The truth is that our animal siblings prepare for winter by fattening themselves up during the harvest season. And the ones that prepare their nests and dens, the ones that hibernate, prepare their nests and dens. What if we let ourselves feel good about doing the same? About not just getting out our fuzzy socks and our cozy sweaters, but letting ourselves actually snuggle down into them for a while? How would our hearts and spirits respond if we actually, literally allowed our bodies and minds space to rest? And the metaphor is around the denial of all kinds of winters in ourselves and in the world. We humans have a tendency to minimize the hard things. Stay positive, we urge each other, and there's space for that. I'm certainly not going to tell you to try to find the positive in all things. That would be insensitive at best. But I am going to tell you that we might feel more meaning or hope or joy in the positives if we've taken the time and the energy to feel and process the hard things, the winters. And I'm going to tell you that I believe we can enter the rest of winter, the time in which the days will get longer, but the weather will get colder and grayer for a while, and the time in which our nation is going to have to get through the winter that's upon us. We can enter this time from a place of confidence in our ability to overcome whatever will be thrown at us and hold hope if we prepare. We can hold all the love and compassion we've been gathering as we meet every week, as we felt on Friday evening if we were here. We can hold all that love and compassion as we meet with our other communities of care, as we join together in learning and remembering resistance, fattening up our hearts and our spirits. And in our nests and dens, our fuzzy socks and cozy sweaters that we have prepared for this difficult season, we can invite learning from our history and the history of other nations who have faced down authoritarian rulers. Please talk with me after the service if you're looking for ideas on doing them. Now is the moment of magic, when the tiny lights on our homes and our trees light up the night, and the tiny lights of our individual spirits come together to light up the world. In this time of increasing chaos, it's more important than ever to stay connected with each other and whatever grounds us, to stay present to what we witness within ourselves and around us, to keep noticing and bringing those moments of magic. And I think it might just be that developing and nurturing a practice of noticing moments of magic or beauty or grace or holy presence can help us get through this difficult winter. Remember the story that Catherine May shared about her friend who has bipolar disorder? How her doctor tells her this isn't about you getting fixed, it's about you living the best life you can with the parameters you have. Catherine May reflects on that story and writes, "This was not the moment in which she lost hope, but an invitation to finally adapt to what she needed. The best way to adapt to what we need is to be real about what we need and to know what we need, which means being present to the winters, the fears, the despair that are also holy moments." As we reflected in Friday evening's winter solstice celebration, and as Genevieve shared in our story, darkness too has its gifts. One of the readings we shared on Friday was David Gates' poem, "Hope is Nocturnal." Hope is nocturnal. It comes from the light, but it does not belong there, preferring the darkness to sharp brightness for which it has no purpose, where hearts will believe happily what they see. So it makes a home in the dark shadows, where it waits to be found by those who need it most. This winter, may we know the dark shadows as well as the tiny lights that comprise our hope for ourselves, each other, and our world. May it be so, and may we be so.